Esteemed Vice Rector, the audience, thank you all for coming. In the next 15 minutes, I will explain a bit my research in English, unfortunately, but I did put a translation of the title in Finnish. So what I'm interested in, what my group is interested in, is to observe chemistry while it's happening. And we use mostly computer simulations. And in the next 5 minutes or so, I want to explain how these things work, how the computer simulations work, what kind of information we get, and then I will highlight a bit the kind of research that we're doing. Why do we want to observe it? It's always a good idea to start with a famous scientist, in this case with Feynman, has already said that before, and therefore it's legit to continue along these lines of research. And he formulated it as this, that if you want to understand how something is working, how someone is working, you need to be able to, you can explain that in terms of the movements, in this case the wiggling and the jiggling as he phrased it. And why is that? So that sounds easy, but it is not easy. And the reason why it is not easy is, first of all, the clicker does not work.
Excuse me, you stay close to the microphone.
Oh, thank you. Sorry, I should stay close to the microphone, yes. Oh, now I go again and wait, sorry. All right, so why is that so difficult? And the reason why it's so difficult is that, well, molecules are small, we don't see them. And what molecules are composed of, atoms are even smaller. Specifically, they are in the order of angstroms apart, and angstroms, well, you can see a lot of angstroms fit inside 1 centimeter. That is why it is so difficult to see them. Yet we have techniques for a century or so that we can use to see them, and we use X-rays, Röntgen radiation. It's the same type of radiation that you get exposed to when the doctor wants to see if your bone is broken in a hospital. What is needed is that the molecules that you're interested in form a crystal. You have to find a way to get it into crystal. Well, home crystals that you have at home are the sugar or the salt. And because inside the crystal, all these atoms are nicely ordered in a periodic array, whenever the X-rays shine on that sample, they will diffract. What you will see is you will get dots on a screen, on a detector screen. And then from these dots, you can use a mathematical technique, Fourier transformation, in order to find out where are all the atoms inside your molecule. So this way, we have a way to get access to where all the atoms are, but not the wiggling and jiggling. The analogy here is, if you want to understand how do birds fly, that was an important question until the 20th century, because we all wanted to fly, but only birds could. Well, you can take a crystal of birds like that. Poor guys, they're sitting all inside a small barn. You can make a picture, but does this tell you how they fly? It does not. There is other techniques. Since the 60s of last century, we have lasers. And one of the advantages of lasers is that you can make very tiny laser pulses. And chemistry takes place on time scales from femtoseconds. And here you can see how many femtoseconds do fit in 1 second. That's quite a lot. To up to seconds. And the way this works is that with a laser, you can create a very short pulse of light. What you can therefore do, you can start a chemical reaction, and then you can send, with a certain time delay, you can send these small pulses of light in to observe how does the absorption of the material or the emission of the material, how does that change with time? And from that, you can then deduce what's going on. But it doesn't really tell you much about what is going on. Only that something is going on. Yeah, that would be that if I want to examine flight by a bird, I would lose a microphone and listen to the frequencies of the wings. It says flap, flop. Well, then I already know there is wings. But I would listen to the sound of a bird. It would say flap, flap, flap. Maybe if I then put a cat next to the bird, the flap, flap goes faster. So I learn there is a response to the cat. But I still do not know how it flies. Because what I need is something like, I want to have a picture like this. Well, that's what I want, okay. So what I want is a picture like this. I want to be able to see the wings of the bird move. I want to understand in time how does this whole structure enable the bird to fly. So experimentally, we can't access these things. We can't access these things at the same time. Sorry, we can access one, we can access the time scale, or we can access the spatial resolution, but not at the same time. And that is what we need if we want to understand chemistry, biology. So what we do instead is, We can make use of simulation. Yeah, we can make use of computer simulation. It is a very large computer, but the idea is basically shown here. Maybe not in this audience, but perhaps your children, they will be playing all kinds of computer games. And why are these computer games so nice? Is they simulate reality. Yeah, if you drive the racing car and you do something that you shouldn't do on the real street, the experience would be as if you were on the real street, because these very powerful processors, they compute what the real system would behave like. And the same is true of your more violent game, like this is a famous Finnish game where you shoot, again, birds. Yeah, a lot of birds tortured in my talk, I'm sorry. Into towers, then these towers collapse in a way that fits your physical intuition, that you think, yeah, that's how it should go. And that is because we know the equations that govern these motions, and we can use these very powerful processors to compute real-time what's going on. And molecules are reality as well. So we can use exactly the same architecture that these companies, in search for more money, are developing to sell to children or their parents. And we can use all that technology now to solve equations for molecules. Well, instead of normal physics, so to speak, that describes everyday life, we need to go to quantum physics. But in the end, the idea is the same. We have a set of equations, lots of them, and we can solve them on a computer like that. As an example, here is some water. And since humans consist of about 70 or more percent of water, this is a good model of the audience, maybe. We can then simulate that, and we can actually see what's going on. So we compute all the interactions between all these water molecules, and this way we can make a trajectory. We can see what happens to all the water molecules, and from it we can derive all the properties of water without getting our hands wet. So that's a big advantage. The disadvantage is this is about 5 picoseconds, so that is a very short time. We cannot reach all the time scales yet. That will also be solved. Okay. So what are we using these computer simulations for will come clear in the next minutes. So what is our goal? Well, one of our goals is to make a motor, to make an engine that is the size of a molecule, so a few nanometers. And again, a lot of nanometers fit in 1 centimeter. And if we have these very tiny molecules, we can do machines on a molecular level. We can do medicine, which uses certain machines to propel things. So that's what we're after. But it's not so easy. And yeah, you cannot just put atoms together and then hope it works for the best. So what we do is we cheat. We look at how nature has solved that problem, because nature has undergone lots of years of evolution, perfectionizing all the chemical processes that are needed to sustain life. So it's a very important source of information for us on how to manipulate chemistry. So what we have here is a protein molecule, the structure of which was obtained by this X-ray crystallography technique I talked about earlier. Well, that is a way that everybody hopefully can relate to. You see all the atoms as balls, but that's not very informative, so I choose a different representation, a representation like this you see in often textbooks. At the moment, it doesn't really matter what it means. What matters is that inside that protein, there is a molecule. And this, that goes too fast. And this allows the organism, in this case a bacterium, to able to sense light, to see where the light is. And the animation shows it. This bacteria is looking around for food, and whenever there's the blue light present, it will move away from it. It doesn't like blue light. And the first step in that whole process, the same as in your eyes, is the absorption of light followed by chemical change. And this protein that I was just showing is the one responsible for it. And now we can put this in a computer. We press enter. We wait a long time. And then we have I should have told you first what's going to happen. I stop it here. So what happens is this protein can absorb light. All of that we can model. And then after a short time, you will see that there is a rotation taking place around this ball. Yeah, you can think of these balls connected by little sticks. It will rotate around this stick, and then that red atom over there will go to the other side. And this happens in the protein all the time. If you do the same reaction in water, it doesn't happen all the time. A lot of other things happen. And what we now want is to actually exploit this rotation for motors. And apparently, this protein is able to control the outcome of that reaction. So that is now what we would like to mimic. And here is one of our attempts, the best one so far. What we have here is a small, not even 30 atoms motor, that whenever you shine light on it, will start rotating. And it will always rotate in one, well, not always, but it will mostly rotate in one direction. So this way, we try now to invent molecular motors, molecular engines that we can use to make molecular devices. Okay, that keeps on going. Unfortunately for me, a Nobel Prize was awarded to this field a couple of years ago. So people got it for actually realizing this in a real experiment, not in a computer. So we moved on, and together with my friend and colleague Jussi Tappari, who's unfortunately not here, we are now exploring ways to manipulate chemical reactions with mirrors. And what I've shown here, not to scale, is basically the idea is that we make a mirror, And it is just a few atoms, like a few tens of atoms thick mirrors. We just deposit these metal atoms on a substrate. Then we have a layer of molecules, and then we have another mirror. And what happens between mirrors is what you can maybe imagine. If I have light inside these mirrors, that light can bounce back and forth between the mirrors. If I now also have a lot of molecules in between these mirrors, it means that while this molecule absorbs, they can all absorb. It means that they all interact with the same light that I now capture between these mirrors. This molecule knows about that molecule, even though they're far apart. That's like having mobile phones and talking, how are you? I'm fine, thanks. Instead, they can, therefore, also their dynamics becomes depending on one another. And this is now something that we have begun exploring. Can we now use this fact that we can confine the light between the mirrors together with molecules? Can we use it for chemistry? Can we change chemical reaction? And here is some example which we recently submitted. What we have here is a layer of molecules which have a very strong absorptivity. They can absorb light very well. We have a layer of molecules pretty far apart, much more than the distance shown in this picture, of molecules that can undergo a reaction. And the reaction you will see in the movie, you will see that this proton, that white thingy, will go to that blue thingy. That's the reaction that we're going to look for. And now what we do is we shine light on this combined system between the mirrors. So we mostly excite the molecules on that side because they're simply more happy to absorb light. And you will see that in the movie, you will quickly see that all the excitation will end up on one molecule. And this way, this is very much reminiscent of how nature is doing the same thing. This is a biological system for light harvesting that you find in bacteria. Plants have very similar systems. But the red molecule that wants to have the light in order to do the reaction, to make electron transfer possible, but the green and the blue are only needed to make that happen. Yeah? They absorb the light and they channel it there. What we have now achieved here, that goes a bit too fast. What we have now achieved here is precisely what nature is doing as well, but by simply putting two mirrors. So I'm very excited about this, and this is something that we currently and will be working on. To summarize what I've been telling about is that, yes, we try to use computer hardware to understand and predict, and therefore, and with that, design molecular devices. We try to see the effect of mirrors on molecules so that we basically make these molecules coherently coupled. And then I did not talk about this, but it is one of nature's own motors, which you're also exploring because it also provides a lot of inspiration from artificial motors. This is small system inside all our cells in our mitochondria, and it also rotates. So if we can exploit that, if we can understand how that works, we can also make molecular motors. And then it is not something that I've done all by myself. It is actually part teamwork, and of which I'm very, very happy to be part of. Not going to mention them all, but you can see them. And I'd like to thank you now for your attention.